This episode is brought to you by BundleRabbit.com, Earth's most accessible book bundling marketplace. Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of 24 books, 34 short stories, and countless articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this quest to raise your output to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life. Welcome to The Questions, episode 269. Hello and welcome to the noisy sound booth, because today it's bloody hot outside and inside. So, the next few episodes will have higher than normal background noise, but hopefully it won't bother you too much. I've got to get a whole bunch of episodes out here because I'm in the throes of writing. I'm so much in the throes of writing, I'm almost at the end of the book that I let the podcast lapse for 5 days and I feel awful. So, I'm recording a big block so that I can get all the way done with this book before having to record another big block. So, here we go. Oh, another update for you guys before I get into the meat of today's episode. My new book, Becoming an Everyday Novelist, is out and available in ebook and paperback now. You can get it wherever fashionable ebooks and paperbacks are sold. And those of you that are patrons for this podcast will find the ebook in your Patreon rewards feed, and thank you so very, very much for your support. I really appreciate it. This book is based on the first 30 days of this podcast. It's revised and expanded to be a little more comprehensive than I was when I was going off the cuff in the first 30 days. Covers all the same material, goes a little more in depth. You might find it useful to keep around, and there will, of course, be an audiobook coming in about a month or two once I get the audiobooks I'm doing for clients done. Okay, enough updates about me. Let's talk about you. Or at least some of you, you know, the ones of you that are fantastic people and send me questions in order to keep this thing going. I've got about 15 in the queue at the moment, and I'm also going to be recording some episodes for the Deep Characterization series, so we ought to be able to stretch that 15 a little bit further, but please do keep sending in your questions because they are fantastic. I love hearing from you guys. Alrighty. Today, Mike asks, is there anything you do in between the writing of scenes? I often want to keep the momentum going if I'm in a groove, but I've found that if I don't pause and think through what I'm going to do in the next scene, I might be able to pump out a good word count, but it tends to fall a little flat. Usually when this happens, I realize that I've written well past what might be considered the opening of the scene. For example, I'm 2 to 3 pages into a scene and almost nothing has actually happened. Often this feels more like typing and less like writing, since I don't always have an end goal for the scene in mind, and so I keep the words flowing but with no clear destination. Do you hit pause between scenes? Do you stop to consider what your goal is for the next scene? On a somewhat related note, now that I'm aware of Wilhelm's Law, to keep the reader guessing, use the fourth or fifth option, I wonder if there isn't a way to incorporate that into my between-scene workflow. Do you know something like this, or know of anyone that does? Mike, this is an extremely erudite and annoying question. It's annoying because there's no really good answer, but I'm gonna spitball through a few things that I think might be useful to you. To answer the question directly, yes, I sometimes hit pause between scenes. I do this most frequently in one of two situations. One, I've lost track of the time flow of the book. This'll happen to me when I'm writing tightly plotted stuff like my mysteries or like Hadrian's Flight, things where the timing of different events coming into and out of the storyline matters, and I have to make sure I'm referencing the right number of days in the past or that what it feels like it's time for in the story, it's actually time for in the plot, and if it's not, I have to rejigger some things to make what has come before either take a little longer or take a little shorter than it has in story time. So for me, in single point of view novels, it really comes up where calendaring is concerned. In multiple point of view novels, it happens to me mostly when it comes to viewpoint shuffling. When I do multi-point of view novels, like the book I'm working on right now, I tend to stick with a character for a chapter, and if there's multiple scenes with that character in a row, I just do a long chapter and break it up with section breaks. And I'm doing this because each chapter is set in a particular time in a particular place, so I group them by point of view. Sometimes I group them by highly interrelated storylines I pop back and forth between. But in any case, when I'm a certain amount into the story, usually for me it's the final third, and this is what I'm in the middle of right now with the book I'm writing, I'll get to a point where I have to be a lot more careful about how I service my storylines because I need to make sure they're all coming together at the same time. And what'll happen usually is that if I don't have a good idea what's going on, I'll write right up against a wall. I'll do all the tricks that you should do to keep it going, and I'll tell you about those in a couple of minutes. But I write myself right into a wall because I'm not aware of what else is going on in the book. I get deep enough into the particular character's point of view that I'm writing that I sort of run out of road. When that happens and I get to the end of one of those scenes, what I usually have to do is go back the last four or five chapters and say, okay, that scene was Doug's point of view, that one's Joss's point of view, that one's Allie's point of view, that one's Cassie's point of view. Whose turn is it? And in my case, with these books in particular, with this series, I'll get to a point where I've actually just hit this novel where I'll give up on doing that entirely, and I will write each story straight through as if it's its own separate book, and then I'll weave them together in post-production, so to speak, because I need to keep my head in the story. And then as the other storylines intrude, as I'm writing that through line through, I have to make crib notes to myself for intersection points so I know at what date and time X character needs to be in Y place or X character's action affects Y storyline. And then when I go back to do the next storyline, I will read those notes, have them fresh in my mind while I'm going forward and writing that one all the way through. Believe it or not, as complicated as that sounds, that technique has worked really well for me. Now, when do you hit pause between the scenes? Well, I'll hit pause between the scenes when I'm out of ideas, which happens sometimes, or when I'm tired. That happens more often. If you're the wrong kind of tired, you're not going to get into the story very well. The right kind of tired can actually help. And here's how you can tell the difference between them. The wrong kind of tired, you don't know what's going on. It's kind of like what you're describing. You're writing, and each sentence follows naturally from the last sentence, and you could just keep typing, but you're sort of bouncing off the surface. You'll see this a lot with new writers. You can tell reading their books, where they'll be deep in the storyline, and then they'll stop for a long description of something that doesn't matter. It doesn't set the mood of the scene. It tells you about visual, usually only visual, things within the scene. But it doesn't do anything. It doesn't enhance the character. It doesn't deepen your perspective. It sets the scene a bit, but it doesn't do double duty, and it goes on way too long for what it is at the expense of plot, character, story flow, etc. When you're doing that, you know that you've got a point of view problem, and that if you're doing that because you're tired, you know you're the wrong kind of tired. The right kind of tired is when you're just sleepy enough that you can dream through your fingers. This is when all the high-tension, self-critical voices in your head have gone to sleep already, and you've got that window of time. Not everyone gets this, but some people get this glorious window of time where as long as they can get their first couple of handholds in the story, it'll just flow. It might flow slowly, but it'll just flow like a dream. Comes right out of the subconscious, straight into the fingers. It's a beautiful thing. Now, what you're talking about, getting started on a scene and writing and writing and writing and having it go nowhere because you don't know where it's going, the problem is probably not actually that you don't have an end point in mind. The problem is probably that you don't have a starting point in mind. Every time you open a scene, you're basically opening a short story. It's a vignette, and the scene has a similar structure in microcosm to an entire short story or an entire book. If you're opening a scene and you're going nowhere with it, you're probably missing one of the three things you need to make a story: character, setting, problem. Probably what you're missing is the problem, because you have your character and you're going on and on describing your setting and how they're moving around in that setting. But they don't have a problem that they're chewing on. And so there's nothing to motivate you into the story. You want to be setting up your stories, whether they're scenes or novels, with characters that have something to react to. They are acting and reacting based on their needs, desires, goals, and exigencies. They're acting both out of who they are and what they desire, and they're reacting to impingements by the wider world onto their space. If you don't have either of those things going on, you don't have a story. even the most boring-ass literary fiction, the most incomprehensible stuff, like James Joyce, has this element in play. It's the only reason that it's readable at all. In the case of someone like Joyce, everything that's going on that's conflicty and that's the problem is going on in the character's head most of the time. The character is vacillating between this motivation and that, between Catholic guilt and erotic bliss or whatever it is. But that central element of conflict, of two things setting each other off and creating an explosion of action, or in Joyce's case, a slow oozing of language, but creating the tension that keeps the reader involved, that stuff has got to be there no matter how simple the story is, no matter how grandiose, no matter how fast-paced or slow-paced, that central element of conflict has to be there. And if you're finding yourself writing openings and not being able to go anywhere, what's probably happening is that you don't have a conflict. So you're not actually writing openings. What you're writing are scene settings. So the first place I would look in what you're doing is not to the end of the scene, but to the beginning. Figure out what it is that you're not bringing into the scene. Try opening the scene later. This is a good technique to practice to get into the habit. It's called in media res, which means in the middle of things, where you do a cold open on a scene in the middle of a conversation that's already happening, or a hostage situation that's going on, or, you know, an explosion has just happened off screen and now beginning. Her ears were ringing. She couldn't tell which way was up. She tried to claw her way forward, but only asphalt met her fingers. She realized she must have been face down. She tried to push against the asphalt, but her back rebelled and her arms collapsed. That sort of thing. And then she's got a problem. The first problem. Her ears are ringing and she doesn't know where she is. Boom. As she solves that problem, it unveils this bigger problem. I'm doing this all extemporaneously, by the way. As she solved that problem, it unveiled a bigger problem, which was that she was laying face down on the street. You know it's the street because it's asphalt. So she might be in danger from a passing car. Or something else might be going on. We don't know yet because we are blinded by the ringing in her ears. But she's laying face down, so she knows she needs to get up. She tries to get up. She can't get up because her back is broken or she's been sprained or something's wrong. Her arms are collapsing underneath her. That's her next problem. She has to figure out what to do, or the external world has to change her circumstances very quickly. And then you've got a story. Your story goes on, and when you feel it running out of gas, when you find your story sort of doing that circling thing where it feels like it's waiting for something, it is waiting for something. What it's waiting for is conflict and direction. Like when you're hiking in the woods for pleasure, you can't go anywhere if you don't have a direction. But that doesn't mean that you have a destination in mind. What you need to do is you need to say, that way, and go that way, until that way ends in a cliff. And then you say, oh, okay, well, I'm going to turn left and go that way. And you go that way until you run across a stream. And a story unfolds as a result of these different actions that you're undertaking. But if you keep yourself stuck down in that process of the character struggle of things unfolding, most of the time, your story will naturally emerge from it. If you're early enough in this process, sometimes it is good to have an end goal. You're hiking to Half Dome, but you're going through a very complicated route through a forest to get there. There's nothing wrong with that. Or you need another character who's not on screen, whose arc you know, like a villain, who's bouncing off your main character. So even if your main character is clueless, something is driving your story, and you can bring that something in when you get lost. And that's Chandler's rule. Chandler's rule is, when you don't know what to do next, big guys with guns come through the door. By the time you figure out why they're there, the story is moving again. It's like that. Some people do outlines. Sometimes I'll still do scene cards. With the book I'm in right now, I had to stop last night after 4,000 words on the day, and I was on a hell of a roll. And I ran right up against a brick wall, and I realized that what had happened was that this book I've already written the end to. I'm doing that narrow slice right before the climax and leading into the climax. I've written the climax and the end of the book. So I'm doing basically late Act 3, early Act 4. And this means that certain things have to match up. There's certain timing marks I have to hit or my ending is blown, and that ending is already done, and it's really good, and I like it, and I want to make it work. So I had to sit down with some index cards last night and write out one sentence of each major event that needed to happen in order to connect point A to point B for each of the five storylines. I wrote those, and I laid them out, and I organized them to give myself an idea of how the story needed to unfold in order to get there. And then I went and wrote four more scenes, got done for the night, was too tired to write anymore, got up, went over and looked at the scene cards, and I'd gone in the heat of composition, I had completely blown up what I had planned to do. My subconscious had picked elements from seven different cards and put them in three different scenes, totally out of order from what I had thought would be the way it needed to happen. But the way it turned out is working really well. And that's what happens with a good scaffolding. If you need a scaffolding, you want to make it in such a way that you are separate from it when you're writing, because your subconscious will rework it if you give your subconscious the freedom to. And learning to ride the wave, the power of that creative wave, is the way to great, great storytelling. If you need to goose the wave with some scaffolding, there's no problem, but you don't want to hold on to the buoy while there's a 30-foot wave coming over you. You want to have a surfboard that you pop on and you ride the wave, and you get all that wonderful emotional narrative power pushing you forward into places, even if it's going toward the place you were expecting to go, pushing you at a speed and an intensity and in a way that you weren't expecting to be able to do. So my basic advice, I think, would be to look for ways to open that up. You may need some structure, like the scene cards I was talking about. If you do, create the structure, look at it, think about it, and then put it away from your writing so that you're not referring to it while you're composing, and allow yourself to deviate. Because things will occur to you during the heat of composition that aren't on the plan, and you want to roll with those, because that's when you get those beautiful, brilliant moments of storytelling genius. Boy, this is getting to be a long episode. But I did say I would give you the tricks to keeping the momentum going from one scene to another so that you weren't stuck on this having to do a cold open every time problem. And this'll show you why I sometimes go and I split my stories out and write them as a collection of little novellas and then weave them together. Because the best trick for doing this is to end each scene on a cliffhanger. Every scene ends on a cliffhanger. You don't want complete resolution. You want the seeds of your next scene in the scene you've just ended. You want the potential conflict of the next scene, even if it doesn't wind up being the ultimate one. You want the initial conflict of the next scene to be implicit in the scene that you're ending. And that way, when you go back to read the last chapter before you start writing for the day, you get all the way to the end of that scene and you're like, oh, I see exactly where I was going, and you just head down and keep going. It'll also have the wonderful effect on your readers that they will read, they'll get to the end of the scene and they'll be like, oh my God, okay, one more before bed. I've got to find out how this resolves. This is, the tension. And they go forward, and of course, by the time the end of the next scene happens, you've resolved pieces of that last cliffhanger, but you've set up a new one, and that draws them through the whole book. I have been loving Greg Iles. I've got two more of his books and read them in the last week, and oh my God, he's so good at this technique. You want to study a master at drawing the reader forward with cliffhangers, many of them very subtle. Check out Greg Iles, I-L-E-S. Oh my God, so good. Oh, I love finding good authors. Anyway, I hope that helps. It was a fantastic question. As you can see, I don't know how long the episode's going to wind up being, but it's taken me 25 minutes to record this, and I've been talking a mile a minute. So that's a great question, Mike. Thanks for sending it in. And if I didn't hit any of the points in the way that you were looking for, please send me a follow-up, and I'll be happy to do a follow-up episode. And that goes true for the rest of you, too. It's good to be back in the booth. It's nice not to be typing all the time, though I've been loving this book I'm writing. Anyway, I better get away because I've got to record more of these episodes for you guys so that I can get back to typing and stretching my fingers so I don't get carpal tunnel syndrome really bad this week. Thanks for writing in, and I'll see you tomorrow. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions. Visit our website at everydaynovelist.com and leave a tip in the tip jar or join the Patreon to support this podcast. The Everyday Novelist is copyright 2017 J. Daniel Sawyer and Artistic Whispers Productions, Inc. and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.